The tape that you are about to hear has been declassified by disability and disadvantage analysts at CFMU Radio. This taped record of conversation had never been heard before being released to you, the CFMU listener. This tape has been condensed and edited from live, personal, or telephone conversation. You will hear privileged discussions, damning indictments, and stark revelations. Once known collectively only to the agents intercepting them, these files have been tagged with the distinct identifier, disrespect. I've been after so many interviews, I thought I had one. Legal aid and the legal process for civil conflicts, but the elected spokesman, a former Liberal cabinet minister, decided he wanted questions in advance, and you know, if you listen to the show, it doesn't work that way. On October 20th of last month, MP Sean Casey from Charlottetown outfoxed the Conservatives on legislation cutting expenditures on veterans' benefits in their administration, pending further study. We still hope to get Sean Casey to talk about it on the show. We were talking to a Finnish researcher. He discovered a way to identify minimally conscious people using a simple electroencephalogram. And he's going to talk to us about the results, which hit the newspapers a week or two ago. The researcher wants the edited interview before it's aired, so that won't be happening next week either, but he's still on the line. We may have Sean Casey. We have a couple more in the bag that we're trying to pull out for you. Seniors Center complaining about Service Canada and the lack of access that seniors have to information and communication from the government as a result of poor service quality. But tonight I was looking through the archive for a show that would interest you and started to listen to this one to see if it would qualify and couldn't stop. So I figure that meets the test. This is Barb German. At the time we interviewed her a few years ago, she was with the Bloorview Children's Hospital and discussing a problem which no doubt is top of mind approaching Christmas time, the plight of poverty for families with disabled children. Disrespect introduces Barbara Fishbane German.
She's a social worker for the last 25 years. She's at Holland Bloorview Kids Rehabilitation Hospital.
That's correct.
And she's appeared in the Star identifying families with children with disabilities as having financial problems. And this was something that struck me, Barb, as something I was familiar with but hadn't made the connection between families with disabilities and financial problems as a direct connection. I welcome you to the show and hope that we can understand it better.
Thank you, Jeff.
Now, what was the issue? Was housing, wasn't it, that made you bring this to the Star, or made you were answering questions in the Star related to housing?
Yes, yes, I was. And I was participating that day in a rally related to affordable, accessible housing,
right,
in particular with a focus on children with disabilities and their families.
Right. And who was sponsoring the rally?
The rally was really an umbrella group of organizations, of advocacy groups across Canada,
mm-hmm,
who were looking at the issue of affordable housing.
Did they have a name?
The Toronto group is the Advocacy Centre for Tenants Ontario.
Okay.
And there are a number of groups that were working together with them.
So they're not all government funded like Legal Aid in Toronto?
Not necessarily. They're not all government funded.
Okay.
No, and that rally was called the Red Tent.
I recall.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you regard it as a success, that rally?
Certainly it was a success, and continue to be one way of raising awareness around this issue. And really what they're looking at is trying to change legislation. And as far as I know, the bill that they were referring to has gone to third reading, and that is deemed a success in terms of looking at the fundamental rights and freedoms of all Canadians, and including
housing. Yeah. So it looks like this bill will go through.
Well, it
still depends on the bloc, doesn't it?
Yes, you're right. Absolutely. It certainly does. I'm not sure where it is now, but when I last had heard from the group, it was moving forward, but I don't know how quickly it's going to move in government.
What was it that drew your attention to families with disabilities and poverty and the link between the two? I mean, you work as a social worker, you must have seen things that made you aware.
Absolutely. As you said, I've worked in the field for at least 25 years, and I have had real experiences of families living on a day-to-day basis, and in particular the area of affordable housing. Many of our families have been paying a tremendous amount of their income, particularly lower income families, towards the cost of housing and paying market rents for that, and have been on waiting lists for social housing, affordable housing, for at this point, officially in Toronto, it is 10 to 12 years, and I think you mentioned that it could even be longer, and that's correct.
I'm almost certain that it's longer, because I've been on that list myself for longer than 15 years and wrote them that I was disgusted and was stepping off it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And certainly as a professional person trying to assist families on a day-to-day basis, it became very clear to me that this was not an isolated incident,
right,
that there were groups of people, numbers of families that were really struggling, and they would come to me over and over again, and I would say, let's look at what your needs are and what is the most important priority, and let's start there. And oftentimes they would say, well, we need housing, and that's the first thing.
Yeah.
And then everything else we can deal with, we'll begin to deal with, but we need a place that's safe, that's accessible, and that's affordable.
You and I were talking about this before, and we mentioned that these families are impoverished apparently two ways. They lose out because they're paying market rents on far less than market incomes, but they also lose out when the money that they have to pay to rent in most families would normally go to other things.
Right.
Transportation, recreation, food, clothing, education, anything else that's normal in family life would suffer if you're paying too much money for the rent.
Absolutely. And there are certainly extraordinary costs related to raising a child with a disability. And there are more costs for transportation to medical appointments and transportation in general, as you mentioned, equipment, you said education, and
yeah.
I'm sorry, there are certainly a number of those things.
And so it seems to have fallen to these families to rely on charitable groups to supply many of these needs.
Certainly, and I think, you know, I have to be clear, and we've talked about different types of programs that are offered through the government, and there is a program, there is an allowance called Assistance to Children with Severe Disabilities.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a monthly allowance that families can apply to. It is income tested.
Okay.
Now, quite a large group of families are going to qualify for that program. That is a very helpful program that looks at all of the costs that we talked about that are associated.
So the threshold for this, for the income testing for this program, doesn't appear to be punitive from what you say.
Not necessarily, but if you are middle income to perhaps low income, of course, then you may, if you're just above that threshold, you may not qualify, and therefore you are certainly taking on all of those added costs. And I have to say that there are some other programs that are specifically related to some of the things like renovations and modifications, which is through the Ontario March of Dimes.
Yeah.
And there are some other funding.
You mentioned President's Choice, too.
President's Choice Children's Charity is a private foundation that has provided a lot of support to our families, as well as the Jennifer Ashley Children's Charity. And they have particular things that they will provide assistance with. Yes.
Okay.
Again, when it comes to those private charities, it is income tested, and therefore only families that are at a certain level of income are going to qualify for those programs.
This one-step income testing seems to be a little brutal, doesn't it? The qualification needs to be a little bit more like income tax, pardon the expression. If your income is above a certain threshold, you maybe get less assistance, but it seems to be problematic if your income is above a certain threshold. You are just that far away from getting all assistance, but you get none.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, those are the families. Sometimes they might have two or three children. They have a mortgage to pay. They have lots of added expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it can be very hard on some of those families who are in that middle range. Absolutely. They, you know, there are some things that are not income tested. However, one of the primary resources that was available to families called Special Services at Home that was not based on income, but that all children with physical and developmental disabilities would be eligible for, and that is an amount of money per year that they could use to hire someone to help keep that child at home.
Right.
That has been frozen for 2 years.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yes.
It seems a cynical way to take care of a budgetary problem when you tackle children who and families who are otherwise too preoccupied and not empowered in terms of a voice for themselves to take your cuts from them.
Well, when we look at it, when I look at the families that I see on a day-to-day basis, you really cannot argue that they have very clear and extraordinary needs. These are things that weren't in their control. There are things that they certainly need help with, and we know that families who have those kinds of supports are able to maintain their children at home and have a better quality of life. And indeed, the government, when they developed that program, talked about wanting to maintain families at home, children with disabilities at home and in the community as opposed to in institutions. And that was a very progressive program at the time. And we know that in the long run, it's going to save the government as well, because the per diem rate for keeping a child in hospital, or if a family breaks down and the parents can no longer cope physically or emotionally, that's the cost of the healthcare system.
So this is saving the health system money as well as helping the children, but the government doesn't seem willing to support it to realize all the savings that could be realized.
Sure, and certainly social programs are a very important resource for the health of families. And we talk about social determinants of health and some of the things that we're talking about in terms of housing and accessibility, and those kinds of things really help families to live a fuller, healthier quality of life.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it bodes well for their future health too, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
And so for future costs, to be very blunt about it, costs to the healthcare system.
Yes, yes. I think that if we were to really look ahead and plan ahead for the future, that having these kinds of things available to families in terms of their environment, in terms of their ability to participate fully in the community is going to be a lot better for them and then for the system as a whole, as you said.
For the community.
Now let's take a short break. Hal Singer, the disc jockey boogie. You've been listening to Barbara Fishbein German, a 25-year social worker at Bloorview Children's Hospital, talk about the link between poverty and disabilities for families with children with disabilities.
I've mentioned that I thought that the government seemed to be applying an old standard of the provincial government, not the federal government, but the provincial government seems to be applying an old standard of disability, whereby you bear the visible stigma of a cognitive deficit, such as Down syndrome, whatever, or you're missing a limb or limbs. But if you have other problems, and you mentioned fetal alcohol syndrome as an example, then they're not so willing to accommodate it. And it's kind of hard to distinguish between when they're not aware and when they're trying to save money. And in the end, you have to wonder if they're trying not to know because they know that will save them money in the short run. And I'm very uncomfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have experienced the same kind of thing in terms of the definition of disability for some of these programs and eligibility for some of these programs. And you mentioned fetal alcohol syndrome or fetal alcohol effects, people with acquired brain injuries. These are often hidden disabilities. And
yeah,
if you can broaden the definition of disability or people who have different abilities and looking in terms of their actual day-to-day function and participation, in terms of defining it around participation, then you look at, you know, things like ability to make decisions, money management, impulse control, as we had talked about earlier. Those things are ways to describe an individual's ability to be fully able to participate in their family and in their community. And that could really make more people eligible for some of these extra supports, financial supports, also supports around having people, respite workers and respite care, where families can get a break, but also people can get that extra set of hands in to help them with activities of daily living, keeps them really healthier longer and improves their quality of life.
Would you say then that one of the solutions to this problem is amending the provincial definition of disability and how it's applied?
I think that's something that we would like to see broadened. We certainly serve also children with autism.
Right.
And those children sometimes are not able to access some of the services that others in the community that are defined as disabled.
Yeah, so you mentioned Wheel-Trans.
Wheel-Trans, absolutely. There's certainly groups that are looking at trying to broaden the definition to include others in that, that they're able to access transportation, which is certainly, you know, a huge way that people are able to participate in life.
Well, we have an election coming up in October of 2011. Do these groups see any signs of progress as that election draws nearer in making this a plank in any party's platform?
I don't know if this necessarily applies, but I think when we go back to the area of housing, we certainly are looking to all levels of government to try to come together and develop a plan. And there is, when I was speaking the other day, it was at a rally for looking at affordable housing and looking at the federal government amending their basic laws around human rights and including housing as a basic human right. Therefore, asking the federal government to take some responsibility and apply some financial support to ensure that all Canadians really do have a roof over their head, but not just a roof, but that it's quality, it's affordable, and it's, in our cases, the definition of accessible, so that people live in safe accommodations where they can safely move around and navigate in their own home to participate with their family and to have access to their washrooms and all of the things that are very important.
So you see one of the solutions to this concern is a stronger role for the federal government in a partnership in addressing these issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. And particularly housing.
Housing, so important. And, you know, the federal, the provincial, the municipal governments, they, for them to work cooperatively together on this would be you know, would really make a difference. As I said, that many of these families are waiting over 12 years, or you said 15 years, for affordable housing, and there are many other vulnerable groups that have been waiting for affordable housing. They're putting a tremendous amount of their income, over 30, sometimes over 50 and more percent of their income, towards paying for housing. So as you know, there are many individuals and families that are existing and paying for the other basic necessities out of whatever is left.
I should probably point out for anyone who's listening that when we're talking of people paying 50% of their income for housing, we're probably talking about people making less or receiving less than $2,000 a month and spending $1,000 or more of it on housing. And so we're not talking about somebody making $70,000 a year and having only $35,000 left over. We're talking about somebody making $20,000 to $24,000 a year and having $1,000 a month left over. So while the fraction, half of your income for housing, is certainly a sign for financial trouble and all kinds of other health and social problems ahead, it's far more severe than it sounds.
That's right. When you're on a low income and you're paying a lot of that, that minimal income that you do receive towards your shelter costs, then, you know, you're not going to be able to buy the food that you need, the healthy foods. You're not going to have the choices, and therefore, and feed your children in the way that you would like to. So, absolutely, that is the way things sometimes are for people, and I think, I'm not sure we mentioned that. We think it's about a third of the population of families with children with disabilities are within that Statistics Canada low income cutoff when it comes to income. So certainly there's many families that are doing quite well and managing. However, there is a percentage that certainly are struggling, and there hasn't been any new housing stock, new developments, for a number of years, really since the 70s and 80s, when there was more money put into, I think, social programs in general from the government.
Yeah.
At this point in time, we really want the voices of our families to be heard in some way.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you think it should be the federal representatives that hear these voices. So perhaps one step that anybody who's concerned about this issue could take is to draw it to the attention of their federal MP.
Absolutely.
Because we have an election coming up there soon, too.
Absolutely. And if anyone has the ability to do that, and if they know of anyone, of a family.
I think if you can afford a stamp, you have the ability.
Absolutely. you know, important.
In fact, at federal MP, you don't need a stamp.
Right.
So you need an envelope and a piece of paper and a pen.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And we certainly, that would be important if you are a family with a children with a child with a disability, or if you know of families, this is certainly an area that we think is important. Now, that's not to say that there are not existing programs that are being offered through the government that are available and that are very helpful and significant to many families. And there are programs, and we talked about the Assistive Devices Program, and that is something when a family is accessing, for example, their monthly disability assistance to children with disabilities, if they're able to access that and their child needs a wheelchair, the Ministry of Health, which funds the Assistive Devices Program, pays 75%, and the disability benefit through the Ministry of Community and Social Services pays for the remaining 25%.
Oh, very good.
So that's wonderful. And they pay for some other forms of equipment, which makes life a lot easier for families. It's the families that don't qualify for the disability benefit that are just above that cutoff that they're the ones that are having to find ways to make up that 25%. And then there is the Ontario March of Dimes that has a home and vehicle modification program. The Easter Seal Society does a lot for families in terms of providing help with accessibility with ramps and bath aids and other kinds of orthotics. So that's very helpful. You know, those programs do exist. So I have to say there are programs out there, and then there are some private foundations, as we mentioned, that have been extremely helpful, such as President's Choice Children's Charity and the Jennifer Ashley Children's Charity. And they are very helpful in augmenting some of those government programs. But, you know, those pots are only, you know, they only go so far, and they don't have all the funds in the world to cover everyone's needs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else that you wanted to say about the solution to this problem being bringing the federal government in?
Well,
do you think it goes further than that?
Well, I think that you had mentioned attitudes, and I think what you're doing today is really raising awareness, mm-hmm, and educating people in regards to some of the needs of individuals, and in particular my focus today on families with disabled children, so that people become, so that they're thinking, and when they're in terms of their planning and their design in terms of communities and in terms of housing, and that's one step in the right direction.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate your perspective today, and you've shed light on a subject that I realized when I read your quote I didn't know as much about as I thought, and thought maybe a listener might feel the same way. So thank you for your gift of understanding and your substantial gift of time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jeff, for your interest in this topic, and we really appreciate it.
All right. Well, we'll air this on Thursday at noon on 93.3.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Barb.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Barbara Fishbane German, a 25-year social worker at Bloorview Children's Hospital, talk about the link between poverty and disabilities for families with children with disabilities.
And now it's time for a short break with Dr. John, the Honey Dripper. Thank you.
guest on Disrespect who always shot straight. Unfortunately, he has passed since he did this interview. If you're on the street, you probably knew him, Kaz Klinowski.
Disrespect is interviewing on subject of second-level lodging homes. Kaz Klinowski is going to talk to us about his past and his experience with second-level lodging homes. He no longer lives in them, but what he sees happen to his colleagues who are there and what might need fixing with the second-level lodging home system. Kaz, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What have you been? What have you done?
I started when I was 16. I had my first job as a door-to-door salesman. I was a Fuller Brush salesman. They don't have Fuller Brush anymore, but back then they did. I've worked in record stores as a floor walker. I worked as a postal worker, inside sorter. I've had about 18 different careers.
Yeah.
Right now,
You used to work in a radio station.
Yeah, I worked as an announcer operator.
Yeah.
For a small FM station up in Northern Ontario.
Okay.
When I was still in high school.
All right.
But, I've had about maybe 18 different careers. I'm not going to get into all of them, but
yeah.
I mentioned a few. But we're talking about second-level lodging homes.
And these are for mental health patients, Are they exclusively mental health patients?
Not all, no.
Okay.
Some of them are just people who can't take care of themselves.
Okay. Now, you had some experience with second-level lodging homes. Yes. It was a while ago?
Yeah, this is a number of years ago.
But you have a lot of friends who are still in the lodging homes, and in fact, you attend a group.
It's called Coalition for Second Level Lodging Homes.
Yeah, okay.
And we meet every third Saturday at the Housing Help Center here in Hamilton.
210 Napier, the church,
Napier, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And, but the problem with boarding homes, I find they're all different. Like, some are really good, where the food's really exceptionally well cooked and prepared, and other places the food is substandard.
Yeah.
So they're not all the same.
Give us an idea of what substandard food tastes like.
Well, as in one where, let's say, the bologna sandwiches were green.
Okay.
In other words, they were rotten.
Yeah.
And the dog wouldn't even eat it. Take a sniff at it and leave.
Yeah. Does staff eat the same meals that you eat?
No. At some places they do, and other places they don't.
All right.
It's different in every one.
Okay.
But I was in one home where the guy ate chicken while we were expected to eat bologna sandwiches that were green.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pathetic. That shouldn't even happen.
You know?
And a lot of people, if they have any complaint about the boarding home, they're afraid of speaking out or getting in touch with the health department or anybody that can do anything because they're afraid they'll get kicked out or put out on the street.
Yeah, you told me, basically, in a boarding home, you have no rights.
Not really. Yeah. You have the Landlord-Tenant Act, which protects you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how many mental patients even know it exists?
Yeah.
Some do, some don't.
Yeah.
Most of them are too far gone to really know what their rights are.
Now, the city subsidizes these placements.
Some of them, yes. Some of them, the city subsidizes them.
But
so they're making a lot of money on the backs of people who are either mentally challenged or have some sort of psychiatric illness. And they're making tons of money on it. They're paying their mortgages off. And these people are left with, I believe it's $125 a month now that they're allowed to keep.
Yeah, I know.
So,
and let's stop right there. Yeah. That $125 a month, you're covered for food and shelter, but everything else comes out of the $125 a month.
Yeah, and plus you get a bus pass.
At all of these?
At a second level lodging home.
You get a bus pass.
You get a bus pass.
So you get to get around, but you have to pay for the things you wear.
Yeah.
You have to pay for your smokes.
Yeah.
You have to pay for drink if you drink.
And you mentioned smoke. Some boarding home operators even take advantage of their residents by selling smokes at a higher level of money than I would if I had a connection, you know.
And the city doesn't intervene in this?
No. They don't even know about it.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the oversight at the second-level lodging homes, if there is oversight, it's very
minimal.
Minimal, yeah.
Like, you're basically under the Landlord and Tenant Act. They can't just throw you out on the street unless they have a darn good reason.
But if you don't know you can't be thrown out on the street, what's to stop them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the problem with boarding homes, I find they're all different. Like, some are really good, where the food's really exceptionally well-cooked and prepared, and other places the food is substandard.
Yeah.
So they're not all the same.
Give us an idea of what substandard food tastes like.
Well, as in one where, let's say, the bologna sandwiches were green.
Okay.
In other words, they were rotten.
Yeah.
And the dog wouldn't even eat it.
You know,
take a sniff at it and leave.
Yeah. Does staff eat the same meals that you eat?
No. At some places they do, and other places they don't.
All right.
It's different in every one.
Okay.
But I was in one home where the guy ate chicken while we were expected to eat bologna sandwiches that were green.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pathetic. That shouldn't even happen. You know? And a lot of people, if they have any complaint about the boarding home, they're afraid of speaking out or getting in touch with the health department or anybody that can do anything, because they're afraid they'll get kicked out or put out on the street.
Yeah, you told me, basically, in a boarding home, you have no rights.
Not really. Yeah. You have the Landlord-Tenant Act, which protects you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how many mental patients even know it exists?
Yeah.
Some do, some don't.
Yeah.
Most of them are too far gone to really know what their rights are.
Yeah. And there are no advocates for these people?
Well, there used to be years ago. I was an advocate for when I worked for the Mental Health Rights Coalition.
Yeah.
I was an advocate for people.
So you did casework?
Well, no, not exactly.
Okay.
But, I mean, if we visited boarding homes and if somebody had a problem, we'd look into it.
Yeah.
But they don't do that anymore.
Mental Health Rights doesn't do that?
Well, they don't have advocates for people in second-level lodging homes like they did in the old days.
Why?
I guess it just costs too much money. And I was a peer support worker for the Mental Health Rights Coalition for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only supposed to be there a year, but they ended up having me for 5 years. And they cut that program out.
Oh, they now were paid, were they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now they have what they call peer-to-peer, I understand, workers, and they are not paid for their work. So what they're basically doing is they're using some psychiatric survivors to advocate for other psychiatric survivors, but they're not willing to pay them.
Right.
That's basically what they're saying. So what they're saying is, you know, worth a nickel.
Yeah.
Goodbye, you know?
Yeah.
And that sucks. I don't think it's right, you know? And there's also the issue of the public trustee who handles finances for people who are unable to handle any kind of level of finances themselves.
Yeah, if you're left a legacy, I understand that the subsidy stops.
Yeah.
Now, if your legacy's in trust, does the subsidy still stop?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. But I understand, I read an article in one of the Toronto papers where a public guardian got busted for mismanaging mentally challenged people's money.
Yeah, I did too.
You know, you read about that too.
Yeah.
So you can't even trust government officials. They're not all corrupt, but the ones that are.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing much happened to that person either.
Yeah.
Nothing much happened. You just read about it one day and it was forgotten about the next.
How do you get into this situation and how do you get out of it?
What situation? You mean being in a
boarding home? Second-level lodging home where you don't get anything to spend and you don't have anything to say.
Well, the only way out is if you have enough smarts to be able to approach community agencies that provide housing geared to income. Because basically most people in second-level lodging homes are on disability, the majority of them.
Yeah.
So if you have the smarts to be able to go to a social agency and say, look, I want to get out of this situation, can you help me? They will.
Okay.
But a lot of people don't even know that exists or that's even aware.
What about these peer-to-peer advocates? It sounds like they're tremendously outnumbered.
I don't know how that works now because I haven't been a worker there for a number of years. I work for somebody else now. I'm in a totally different area of part-time work. I work part-time.
Yeah. You'd have to have somebody tell you about it.
Yeah.
In other words, to figure it out.
Yeah. But they don't want people in boarding homes to be smart, because then they're losing money, right? They're going to lose business. So they want to keep you stupid so that you keep them going, you know?
I've known the ODSP system to actually put people in boarding homes who are living in apartments, too. How does that happen?
Oh, that's probably in cases where a person can no longer take care of themselves, like bathe or dress themselves.
Oh, I've seen them break up married couples.
You're kidding.
And send them to homes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that happened to you.
Yeah, it does. Oh. Yeah. It's a power they have.
Yeah, a lot of people are afraid to speak out because they're afraid that, like I said, they're afraid they're going to get booted out on the street or they're going to give them a rough ride, you know?
Yeah.
If they speak out or say anything.
What's it like to get a rough ride?
I don't know, because, you know, when things got really bad, I just bided my time till I got out, and now I'm in an apartment, so.
Yeah.
You know.
But somebody who's getting a hard time there, what would they do to them?
Oh, I knew this one gal, she had Down syndrome.
Yeah?
And they pick on her all the time.
You know, staff?
It's all her fault. You know, she's bad. And
yeah?
Oh, yeah. They really, and they just...
Soak it up. Have to.
Soak it up, yeah.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I mean, that's what happens once you're in the psychiatric system. You know, unless you have a lot of money or you're from a rich family, forgetting and getting any kind of justice, they'll just throw you in a boarding home and forget about you. That's basically it.
When somebody has an inheritance and they start billing them $1,100 a month, you basically divide what you've been left by $1,100. Yeah. And after that runs out, you haven't got anything to say or...
No.
Nothing to fight with.
No.
No.
No. And, you know, they say they have advocates for the mentally ill, but there's really, it all looks great on paper, but there's actually nothing being done.
Yeah.
Really.
Who are the advocates that they say they have?
Well, even our Coalition for Residential Care Facilities, I mean, we do what we can, but what can we do? There's not much you can do.
No. Well, you've been asking for an increase in that 125 for a long time.
Yeah. We've had, we're asking for it to be raised to 185.
That's not much.
No, it's not much.
Yeah.
And I mean, 185, how can you live on that? If you buy cigarettes, there's $140 for cigarettes a month.
Yeah.
And they only give you 125. So how are you going to buy your toiletries, your clothes, your shoes? You know, you have to go to clothing banks to get clothes if you're smart enough to know about them. You can go to clothing banks to get shoes and clothes. You can get toiletries for free at different agencies, or you go to different parties at Christmas. They give you stuff like aftershave, shampoo, you know, that kind of thing. So there are ways of getting around that to get stuff for free if you know about it.
Where would somebody call who was concerned for someone in a care home to find out about this stuff? Is there a place you can call?
I don't really... I guess if you're really concerned about someone's well-being, you could get in touch with the Mental Health Rights Coalition.
Yeah, okay.
Like they're on Emerald and Main now.
Yeah.
They moved.
Okay.
And I don't know the exact address, but it's right on the corner of Emerald and Main.
Okay.
And they'd be able to help.
They're in that Sons of Italy project, are they?
No, Maine, not King.
Oh, King, okay, Maine. Yeah, all Maine. Right, sorry.
You know, across from Gibson's Pharmacy?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, right there.
Okay, yeah.
And they could probably be of some help. But, I mean, it's pretty rough. Once the psychiatrists get a hold of you, you're done. You're like toast. Unless, like I said, unless you have a lot of money or if you're from a rich family. But if you're not...
Well, the sleep therapists are pretty free with drugs, too.
Yeah.
If you have apnea or something like that, they'll just feed you with speed until you can't do anything.
Yeah.
And it's quite surprising.
Yeah. Well, they destroy a lot of lives.
Yeah.
It's sad to say, but from my experience of psychiatric facilities, you know, they just dope you up. They don't even bother dealing with the issues, the problems. They just... you know, they'd rather dope you up to shut you up, and they don't want to hear about it. You know what I mean?
So if you come out of it and you're frustrated, what happens then?
Well, then you get frustrated and angry, and next thing you know, they blame you because you have anger issues. Well, if you were abused as a child or abused by family members or whoever, you'd be angry too, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It's only natural for a human being to get angry if they're in a situation where they're not treated with dignity. So that's normal.
So they set you apart as somehow other than the kind of human being they are if you're angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, a lot of people are with psychiatric illnesses are still viewed as subhuman by some people.
Yeah.
By some people, not everyone.
Yeah.
And that's sad, you know.
Yeah.
Because these are human beings,
yeah,
and a lot of them are talented or were talented at one time,
yeah,
but they've been through the whole rigmarole so long and so for so many years that they've just given up on themselves, you know. A lot of them end up going to jail, and the whole vicious cycle starts all over again, you know. It's sad, but...
Well, this system of constantly taking away from people who've contributed to the system until something's happened to them is humiliating for everybody on fixed incomes, but most of all for people in care homes.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be there for the meals. You have to plan your life around the schedule that's convenient for the staff.
Yeah, and they hold on to the medication, so you have to be there at the times that the medication's being given out.
Yeah.
So they have control over that. They have control pretty well of your whole life, really, when you're in there.
Yeah.
You have really no say in the matter.
Yeah.
And even if you do have a family heirloom or whatever, somebody leaves you money or property, and you can't take care of it, then, you know, good luck getting anything because it'll be eaten up in a number of years, you know.
Yeah.
It'll be eaten up and you're left back to square one with nothing, next to nothing. There should be a better system of doing things where you don't lose a lot of cash, but like I know in
system seems set up to burn cash.
Like in Scandinavian countries, they have a whole different way of treating people with mental illnesses or even people with in the criminal system. It's totally different over there. Over there, they actually try to rehabilitate people.
Yeah.
And they don't really send them to jail. They send them to cottages where they live and work. And,
really?
And when they feel they're ready, they send them back to the cities and they put them in apartments and give them a car and a life.
Yeah.
But here, it's more punishment than rehabilitation, you know. Even in the criminal justice system in Canada. The criminal justice system in Canada is a joke anyway.
Well, yeah, we've got the legal aid strike going on now. Yeah. And even, you know, even the Crown lawyers, the ones who prosecute as opposed to defend, the ones who are supposed to be trying to put you in jail, they say it's not fair anymore.
No, well, it isn't. Well, I mean, it's not what you've done, it's who you are. Like, if you've got the money or you're a person of high standing in the community and you're caught doing a criminal act, then they kind of slough it off and give you a little slap on the wrist and say, oh, you're a bad boy, and you know, nothing much is done. It depends who you are. Like if you're I mean, there's good and bad in every walk of life. I'm not trying to say they're all bad, but I'm saying that if you're a person in the community who's looked up to and you do something wrong, usually they'll give you a slap on the wrist or tell you not to do it again. But if it's just an ordinary citizen who's not in a position of power or trust, they'll nail them to the wall.
You know? So if you're in a care home, they won't, you know, and you're charged criminally, they won't look for rehab. They'll just put you into the justice system, like Kingston or something.
Well, if it's serious enough, I suppose it would. If it's just a nickel and dime thing, I don't think so. But if it's serious enough,
You'd think the more serious it was, the more seriously they'd go for rehab.
Well, it doesn't work that way.
No, I guess not.
No.
All right. So what's the hope for the future for people at second-level lodging homes?
Well, I think the only future you have is your own head. If you're bright enough and intelligent enough to get out of that situation,
yeah,
and be able to function in any kind of level where you could have a better existence than living in a second-level lodging home,
yeah,
more power to you, you know. That's
yeah,
what I say.
Yeah.
And there are people who out there who can, who are willing to help, even if people can't manage their money. There's trustees that can be connected with who will make sure all their bills are paid and that they have so much spending money every week.
Who does this?
Well, there's agencies that have them. That have okay, trustees that are willing to do that for them.
Are we going to talk about those agencies here or no?
No, we're not going to mention their names.
Okay.
I don't want to mention names, but there are agencies.
So if you're in that situation, you might be able to find out who.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't want to mention any.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
So you can get help, but
yeah,
you have to initiate it. Yourself, or you have to have someone in your family initiate it for you.
Yeah. Or a friend.
Or a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't lose your network on the way down.
Because it's really sad, you know. You go to some of these homes and you look at some of the people that live in them, and they look so sad. They look like they've just given up on life, you know.
Well, they haven't got the money to do anything but sit on the porch.
Yeah.
And you see them all over the place just sitting on the porch.
Yeah. Smoking cigarettes or bumming cigarettes and drinking coffee.
Bumming cigarettes.
Well, what can they do? They haven't got any money.
Yeah.
What are they supposed to do? You know, go on the corner of King and James and, you know, hook for a living, and then they're back in jail again. You know?
Yeah.
So it's a vicious cycle, you know.
I live across from a care home, and I was approached recently to buy a bus ticket, and I don't know where they got a bus ticket, but... they wanted to sell the bus ticket for a discount so they could get something else with the money.
Yeah.
And they were basically shuffling around for loonies.
Yeah.
So it gives you an idea of the situation that they're in. I don't think anybody who's listening to this show, unless you've got a radio in your care home, has lived on $125 a month.
No.
It's I'm going to refer you, if you're interested in the economics of the situation, to a site, www.thestop.com. org. And I think it's www, but it's The Stop. Put it in Google, The Stop. And they have at the bottom of the site, they have a link called Do the Math. If you go to Do the Math, you can put in what you think it costs to live. And when you're done, you can see, in fact, what you'd really get in each different situation. I don't think they even have a listing for care homes. I think I'm going to encourage them to do so because that's the worst of the situations.
Well, I work part-time, and I'm on disability, and I'm able to work part-time, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I live
on... They take half of that, though, don't they?
Yeah, they take half your pay and give you an extra $100 on your check.
Yeah.
So I live on approximately about $1,150 a month after you put my pay together with my check.
Yeah.
And, I mean, my bills are like $1,000 a month, so I'm left with maybe... Well, under $1,000 a month. I'm left with about $94, $97.
Okay.
After all my bills are paid, because I have like stuff like accident insurance that I pay. I have to buy cigarettes. I have to buy food. I have to buy a bus pass. It all costs money.
Yeah.
So I'm left with about $94 leeway.
Yeah.
And that's what my entertainment money is.
Yeah.
If I was in a boarding home, I wouldn't have that.
Yeah.
I'd have next to nothing. I'd have a bed, my meals, and $125 a month. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty depressing for anybody to have to live with, you know.
Well, after your cigarettes, your $125 a month would be nothing.
No.
And cigarettes are known to be calming to psych patients as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, in fact, there was a time when psych patients got free cigarettes.
Not anymore. They have smoking cessation programs.
Yeah.
Try to help psych patients quit smoking.
Yeah.
Because pretty soon, I don't know when it's going to come into effect, but all hospitals are going to be non-smoking, totally non-smoking. All the psych hospitals are going to be totally non-smoking. Mm. They already are not allowed to smoke in hospital, and pretty soon they'll have to go right across the highway, across the street, if they want to light up. Yeah. That's all it's going to be. But there are programs that will help you quit if you want to quit. They do have smoking cessation programs in place.
Are they any good?
I believe they work, yeah.
Well, we have one bright light in the darkness for people in second-level lodging homes. Anything that you want to say that we haven't covered?
Well, if there's anybody listening that wants a better life, you know, there's people out there who are willing to help you. You just have to take the first step, that's all.
Appreciate that, Cass. Yeah. Thanks for taking the time to come in here today.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
This is Jeff Langhorn of Disrespect Radio. I think you're here instead of listening to commercial radio because you want to. Well, something funny, I'm here because I want to, too. All our hosts on community radio are unpaid volunteers. Our management takes less than scale, so they must want to, too. Our guests, they have to want to as well. They're not looking for the big endorsement. They're not looking for big bucks. They're here because they want to talk to you, the CFMU listener. We're simulcast around the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And we're also podcast back 6 or 7 years at this time. We're archived at radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can reach the show at disrespect@lycos.com. Come back at showtime next week on CFMU 93.3 on your radio at 12 noon on Thursdays. You know you want to.